Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Voters flock to early voting sites on the first day they can cast ballots in person. Plus, another string of visits from presidential candidates as we approach the final days of the campaign. And the new lawsuits targeting Wisconsin's elections ahead of November. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for October 25th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Well, we are 11 days to go until November 5th, and in-person voting occurred on Tuesday. And man, there was actually a big number of people who turned out on the polls to vote ahead of Election Day. Now, we're going to get into some of the takeaways of why this might be and what some of the numbers are looking at. So let's first just look at the day of number one, which was on Tuesday. We had more than 97,000 Wisconsin voters cast ballots on the first day of in-person voting. Now, when you compare that to 4 years ago in 2020, that number was roughly around 80,000 voters who took advantage of early voting on the first day it was offered. Breaking it down by some of the counties as well, 12 out of 15 counties that reported fewer early in-person votes compared to 2020 went for Trump. That was about minus 1,100 votes. And then if you look at some other counties, about 11 out of 14 with the biggest spike also went for former President Donald Trump. So that is in the plus, about 1,100 plus votes. Breaking it down by counties too and where we're seeing these surges, we're talking about the biggest and most important counties in this election that comes to Democratic strongholds in Dane and Milwaukee, the Wow counties, and the Bow counties. Looking at that data, Jerry, you pulled a lot of figures comparing from 2020, which is kind of tough to compare. That was, of course, during election during a pandemic. But looking at Dane, Milwaukee, they are up nearly 60% in Dane County when it comes to how many people are voting early. Looking at the Wow counties, Waukesha, Ozaukee, Washington all saw an increase compared to 4 years ago. Same with the Bow counties, which is a good trend, right? Mm-hmm. More people are heading to the polls. You know, we often hear this from Republicans. You never know what's going to happen on Election Day. We can have a snowstorm. You can have a family emergency. You got to do X, Y, and Z. But what we want to talk about is some of the takeaways is that it's really hard to tell if Republicans' messaging that we've heard from former President Donald Trump, the chair of the state Republican Party, Brian Schimming, get out, vote early. I don't care how you do it. Do it. Is that what's happening here, or is it just Democrats as well? It's kind of hard to tell.
The one conclusion I can share from my conversations is enthusiasm is up. Like, that is clear. The caution, though, is I'm not sure how we're going to vote this election versus past years. So let's pay a big picture look. Before the pandemic, absentee voting in Wisconsin was largely done early in person. In 2016, 82% of all absentee ballots were cast early in person. In 2020, it cratered to 33% for an obvious reason why. There's a pandemic. People want to go out and vote in public, so they did it from home. In 2022, it crept back up to 42%. So my question is, number one, are we going to vote like we historically did, where the vast majority of absentee ballots are early in person? Or are we going to have this kind of like happy medium where there are people have gone, okay, I've voted by mail. I like it. It's convenient. I'm going to keep doing that. So that's the first hesitation about the context. Number two, are these traditional voters who are using the early process more, or are they new voters? So what happens is, so I'm a dork about this stuff, as you know, we've talked about this many times, spend way too much time looking at numbers, but I don't have the files the parties have. Both parties and interest groups have these voter files, and they rate you, like how often do you vote? Do you vote every single election? Do you show up just for midterms? Do you come in the spring? Like, what's your propensity to vote? Then the second thing they do is they also rate you, like, how likely are you to be one of their voters? You know, are you, if you're a Democrat, you want to know people are Democrats. So when people knock on your door during an election, they kind of like, they canvass you and, hey, you're going to vote for so-and-so? Do you support it? Ask you questions about the issues. They take notes and they create a file about you. They then take these early vote returns and they can track who's turned their ballots in. They say, okay, is this a person who votes every single election? All right, then this is just an election day vote. Nothing to, you know, see here. Or are you a brand new voter and you lean a certain way? That's what gets their attention. Like, what does this mix look like? For Republicans, yes, the message of early voting is resonating, it seems like. And talking to some people, they feel like the second they saw the image of Donald Trump with that first assassination attempt, they're like, I can't wait to vote for this guy. I'm going to turn out no matter what. Boom, you got a big surge in some places. But if they're just going to turn out on election day no matter what, that's not that big a deal. I don't want to diminish it, but I mean, like, in terms of the mix of who votes, it's the low propensity voter that Turning Point USA is chasing. So this is a group that is aligned with Donald Trump. Traditionally, the county part, the city, state parties oversee most of the turnout operation or the coordinated campaigns. Turning Point is taking a different track. They are not really working in conjunction with the party, their outside group. They want to find low propensity voters who like Donald Trump, but don't know, they basically don't vote, all right? And they think they can turn out these people who have not shown a, I don't know, interest in voting before. If that happens, it could be a huge boost for Donald Trump. If that strategy fails, though, and they miss the casual voter who is waiting to be encouraged, that could be a problem for Republicans. We won't know until later on. The second thing is, we should know probably a little more next week what's going on, because we can see a little more of the mail returned absentee ballots plus early vote and see where it's at. I caution, though, when you're at home, if you see people talking about, oh, Dane County has fewer absentee ballots turned in at this point compared to 4 years ago. Well, yeah, because people voted by absentee by mail way heavier 4 years than now. So don't read too much on that just yet. Let's give it another week, figure out what's going on, and we have a better idea then how it's going to impact turnout for Election Day.
I think bottom line, talking to both parties and the campaigns this week, is that they're encouraged regardless of seeing these big numbers, because then that saves them time from going back to those voters and say, hey, are you getting those text messages? We all get tired of those. Well, they somewhat stop after you do cast your ballot. So that's a positive. On the other hand, while we saw great enthusiasm, a lot of people standing in lines, a lot of them were long lines. So there were some hiccups on day one, on day two, and as of yesterday, still some municipalities were having trouble printing labels that go on the absentee ballot envelope. So it caused some headaches for some election officials. Meanwhile, some other election officials say, well, you should have been prepared for this. I mean, this is a big election.
I never realized that printing a label could cause a problem. But
right.
Basically, so the system that the state uses to print out labels, it had such a demand for the printing of it, it slowed the entire system down and caused delays at the polling places all 3 days. Now, the commission told people, the clerks, you can write the information outside the envelope. That takes some time, too. So they've tried to clear it up. They work with the Division of Enterprise Technology to try and expand the bandwidth, speeds things up. We'll see if that is a problem going forward in the next week.
And just to be clear, too, this is not a cyber attack or anything. It's just pure numbers, and they just weren't, the systems weren't prepared to have that much. So hopefully, we all hope that it gets better in the next few days. Now let's move on to the next topic, which, no surprise, more high-profile surrogates and the presidential candidates, some of them at least, were in Wisconsin this week, as this really is the final stretch until November 5th. So first, looking at the calendar, going back from October 20th, J.D. Vance was in Waukesha. The next day, Vice President Kamala Harris was with Liz Cheney, the former Wyoming congresswoman, again, was in Brookfield. Then we had Obama, former President Obama, pairing up with Walz in Madison, October 22nd. And then looking ahead to next week, the one thing that we do have confirmed is former President Donald Trump will be back October 30th after doing about 7 visits in like 8 or 10 days just a few weeks ago. Also, Vance will be returning to Racine on Monday. So, of course, once again, we're in the national spotlight. But when it comes to messaging, I think what I have noticed, too, is the criticism is ramping up, the harsh attacks against one another. So let's first just hear from Vance and Walz kind of going back and forth on their message to voters and attacking one another.
What you'll never hear Donald Trump say is that you should be prevented from saying something because I disagree with it. And yet Kamala Harris, every single action that she's taken, everything that she says, she'll often defend, not disagreeing reasonably, not persuading her fellow citizens, but trying to silence her fellow citizens. Kamala Harris, I think the only bad person today in American politics is you. Why don't you try persuading your fellow citizens instead of attacking them and censoring them? And for all of you, Donald Trump and I will fight for your right to speak your mind.
Donald Trump means government's freedom to invade your bedroom, invade your exam room, invade your library. Hell, invade anywhere. He's talking about using the army against folks. So we'll, you know, we know where that's going. We don't overthink this. Things work best in neighborhoods. They work best in communities. They work best in states. They work best in countries. If you just follow that golden rule of minding your own damn business, and things work fine.
So for the Harris campaign, let's start with that, because she's bringing out a lot of high profile individuals. You know, next week she's with a lot of superstars, with Beyonce, and on Tuesday in Houston she was with Bruce Springsteen and plenty of others, actors over the weekend. You know, former President Barack Obama, we knew that was going to happen too. But when it comes to these individuals, I mean, does it make a difference? Are you just going to vote for Harris just because you see her on stage with Beyonce? I mean, remains to be seen. But that goes back to the argument of celebrity endorsements really don't carry a lot of weight, but it does give you a lot of airtime, that's for sure.
And draws the crowds. Mm-hmm. Like I wondered, with the event this week in Brookfield with Harris, Cheney, and Charlie Sykes, a former sort of talk show host, I mean, they're trying to appeal to Republican swing voters. I've read stories that ask, if Harris spends too much time trying to appeal to them, does she risk alienating the base, right? Like,
right.
It's this balancing test. Two, it was kind of an interesting dynamic to watch Liz Cheney, who has an anti-abortion record, talk about how post-Dobbs, some of the states have gone too far, essentially. Now, she's not saying she is suddenly supports abortion rights, but she feels like some of the punitive measures you see in states is too much. And Charlie Sykes, who used to host MC, the annual Wisconsin Right to Life banquet, asking Liz Cheney to weigh in on the abortion issue in a way that makes Harris look fair. It's interesting how willing some conservatives are who are never Trumpers to go to say, they can't stand this guy being in office and this is what it takes, they're going to do it. I'm curious, from your perspective, is anything really changing in message-wise? I mean, do you think, is it really that much sharper than it was before, and how so?
Right. I mean, when I talked to the campaigns this week, I was like, what is going to be your final pitch to voters in the final days? And honestly, none of it was much new. The Harris campaign did say they want to go back more on the abortion issue, because even just with the event with Liz Cheney, like you saw, it was more about Donald Trump, in their view, is a threat to democracy. It's once again going back to January 6th, reminding voters of what happened 4 years ago and what could happen if he is in office, of what they are predicting if he is elected. Meanwhile, on the other hand, the closing messages for the Trump campaign is Kamala had a chance to fix it. She didn't, so Donald Trump will. And a lot of that has to do with immigration, inflation, because those are the real, I think, pocketbook issues that voters are still like thinking about almost every day, right? If you're going to the grocery store, you're filling up the tank, everything is adding up. Will Harris then in the final days kind of shift that tone too? Well, here's my plan to address it. That's what's going to be interesting to see, because they're all the same messages, but the events to me are getting a little bit more smaller, a little bit more intimate, to try and focus on a certain theme. But then I think in the final days, there'll be the bigger rallies, which we're seeing too. We know that Donald Trump is likely going to be holding a big rally very soon at Pfizer. He said that too, and he said he was going to Green Bay, so it could be very soon that we see that down the line as well. All right, let's move on to some other election-related news this week, and it's about lawsuits. Mm-hmm. And what's surprising is that these lawsuits are being filed even before the November 5th election. So let's first start with one that involves a Green Bay voter and the town of Oshkosh, and their clerk. They both have asked a federal judge to bar the Wisconsin Elections Commission from using its website that allows people to register and request absentee ballots due to what they allege are, quote, inadequate security measures. Meanwhile, on the other hand, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., back in the news this week, after failing to get his name off the ballot in state and lower courts here in Wisconsin, he is now asking the U.S. Supreme Court to remove his name. A little problematic. People are already voting here in the state. The third lawsuit that we want to talk about happened last week, which is from a conservative legal group who also sued WEC for not providing records about the guidance that they issued related to same-day registration postcards. Let's first start with the latest one, Jared, which is about the Green Bay voter and the town of Oshkosh clerk.
So, look, we're already voting, so how are you going to get something stopped when it's already in process? Don't forget, usually when you file a lawsuit, it takes a couple weeks to even serve it on the other party. They then get time to respond. You mentioned 11 days. There's not time for that lawsuit to be decided or injunction to be issued, barring something miraculous before the election. much like the lawsuit filed last Friday about, you know, those records. It seems like, talking to some lawyers this week, one, if you're talking about election lawsuits, there's one called a Goldilocks issue. You can't be too early. If you're too early, there's no controversy, and the judge doesn't want to hear it. You can't be too late because of a principle called latches, which says you waited too long to file this, the controversy is over, you got to find a sweet spot. But so some attorneys I talked to, they felt like these aren't really about ahead of the election, it's after the election. If Harris wins Wisconsin by a healthy margin even, there are people who tell me they expect Donald Trump to go to court. Now, if Trump wins, I'm not hearing much from Democrats of, yeah, we're prepared for a lawsuit. No.
Maybe a recount.
Recount, you know, but claiming fraud, that's not really on their docket right now. But you see conservative groups, those aligned with Donald Trump, who are teeing up possible legal action. This feels like, to some people I talked to, an avenue to raise an issue in the court after the election. We'll see. But it's something to keep an eye on if we're dead close, if we're dead even come election day, what's going to happen with these legal actions if they become a post-election action.
Right, and what I thought was maybe a little surprising with all the delays and the printing of the sticker that goes on the absentee ballot envelope this week that have caused long delays in in-person voting. We haven't really heard too many people, conservatives at least, have an uproar about it. Is that something that the Trump campaign goes back to after the election, after they lose? That's just something maybe to keep in mind if that's what they're keeping tabs on. Another update on legal issues that we want to talk about is the Wausau mayor, of course, Doug Dinney, who famously put on a hard hat and carted out the absentee ballot drop box outside City Hall there. The latest reporting that you did this week, JR, notes that the Wisconsin Department of Justice sought cell phone records from Mayor Dinney, computers, and other devices as they continue to investigate possible election fraud that Dinney possibly may have made while moving this absentee ballot drop boxes, because his argument was, well, while it was closed, people couldn't use it at the time, it wasn't bolted to the ground. Now it is bolted to the ground, voters can use it again, but this still raises a lot of questions in Wisconsin DOJ's eyes.
So the search warrant that I got a hold of, a couple of interesting things in there. One, all they're looking for. Two, they're alleging basically a violation of law dealing with ballot boxes. Now, a ballot box is defined in statute in various places. That's different from an absentee ballot box. So I'm not sure, I'm not a lawyer, I always say that, but talking to some lawyers, they are kind of questioning if that statute really fits an issue with an absentee ballot drop box, because they're different. Like a ballot box, for example, has a specific, like, how big this slot can be for the ballot. Like, there's this process you're supposed to, like, take it and shake it out, stuff like that in the process. So that's not a drop box. Remember, the Supreme Court of Wisconsin reversed an early decision and allowed drop boxes. There's no statute that expressly addresses the state law. So that's one interesting issue. Number two, the application, which is signed by a judge, wants information going back to April 1st. Remember, Dinney became mayor in mid-April after winning the election. Drop boxes weren't legal back in April. So I asked him about this entire issue, and he said, I don't understand why you want something from before it was even legal, that I would anticipate in July the Supreme Court would allow drop boxes. So that's an interesting.
He did campaign on drop boxes, though,
that's
too.
Very true.
That could be something in the mix of what they're maybe looking for. But
great point.
You know,
great point.
It's still fascinating, this whole thing.
And there's definitely an undercurrent of criticism among conservatives, like, why are you doing an executing a search warrant at both his office and his home when we're talking about something like this? Is this excessive? Is a question they're asking in conservative legal circles.
Oh, it'll be fascinating to see where this goes from here. All right, now we're going to kind of rewind a little bit on Rewind, looking back to last Friday, which was the first and only matchup in the U.S. Senate debate between Senator Tammy Baldwin and Republican candidate Eric Hovde. Now, plenty of takeaways we want to get into, but first I just want to toss to the video because it really kind of describes the tone of the night. When you hear it from mainly the main argument from Eric Hovde was he called Senator Baldwin a liar. A lot of that has to do with the political ads targeting him, things on past comments like abortion and other issues like immigration. But on the other hand, when it comes to Baldwin, she also tried to defend herself, and there was a lot of personal attacks against her and her partner. So let's hear from both of them, and then we'll kind of dive into overall other takeaways from the night.
Look, there's so many lies that Senator Baldwin's made up. As I said, she's perfected the art of lying. Where I'm from, where I live, the things I've said. She takes this much what I've said and puts it out of context and then tries to say I'm saying something different than I've said. You've heard it on Social Security. She always tries to run around the fact that we have gone into a debt crisis that has created the inflation and the problems that so many people are experiencing that are hammering the livelihoods of most Wisconsinites. You can stay with Senator Baldwin, who's been in Washington for 26 years. Do you think you're better off than you were 4 years ago or even 26 years ago? I think it's time for a change.
Eric Hovde just said something about lying. Independent fact checkers have fact-checked him 19 times with 19 falses. So keep that in mind when you listen to him. He's made assertions about my personal life. I want to talk about his professional life. Eric Hovde owns a $3 billion California bank, a $7 million Laguna Beach, California home, and he's been named among the more influential residents of Orange County 3 years in a row. This election is about regaining our rights and freedoms. This election is about helping working people get ahead, not supporting a $4 trillion tax cut for the rich and big corporations.
As in any debate, we always look for some viral moments. Jaron, your opinion, was there any?
I didn't really hear one from talking to people this week. There was one thing, though, that Democrats have tried to really pin on Hovde. There's a question about the farm bill, and he said, I'm not an expert on the farm bill. Obviously, it's a key piece of legislation for Wisconsin farmers. Tim Ball has been endorsed by the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation, the first Democrat running for statewide office in at least two decades endorsed by the Farm Bureau. Post-debate, he started hearing more from, Democrats who are trying to do digital ads about Hovde's comment. Then he voted early on Tuesday. We asked him about the whole Farm Bureau thing. He said basically he thought it was absurd and that he's not an expert on this. Why am I being asked about this? Not exactly the best answer, granted. You maybe shouldn't be an expert on every bill that's before Congress, but that's a big one. So Democrats trying to make hay out of it. I'm not sure it's going to be a major closing issue, but one to keep an eye on. Otherwise, there wasn't anything that seemed to change the trajectory of the race that I saw. I mean, did you see anything that really kind of change this race?
Not much. I think for Hovde, there was a lot more pressure on him for, the audience, statewide audience, to get to know him. So right off the bat, he tried to introduce himself. He also tried to defend himself. I don't live in California. I just own business there. I'm from Madison. He tried to knock Baldwin for not attending undergrad at UW-Madison when she attended law school, things like that. So there was one thing that I wasn't really there, in my opinion, was much testy exchanges just because of how the format was built. So at times it felt like the candidates themselves, right when they were getting close to answering the question, they were cut off. But yet again, these debates are becoming less and less in general. Not as many people watch them. Now, granted, on the presidential side, that it was a huge moment, of course, after Joe Biden flopped. But when it comes to more localized races, if you don't know the candidates, maybe you're watching, but it's also on a Friday night, the timing, whatnot. But I know us politicals, of course, we're watching. But does it change the race? Back to your question, Jared. I don't think so. But looking at polling, this night of the debate came after some positive news for Hovde because mm-hmm. he is upticking in the polls. Now, there's plenty of others that still show a very close race, but this comes after some warning signs from the Baldwin campaign after they had some internal polling that didn't match Marquette's polling. Now, we're going to get another look at that on Wednesday. But just looking at some of them, like Emerson, they had them tied at 48-48 apiece. 2 weeks ago, Baldwin was up 50-46%. Quinnipiac poll, also very tight, just a one-point advantage that Baldwin has, but others are very different. So it just seems like the national attention, too, on this race has been heightened quite a bit just in the last few days.
And that probably played into the latest fundraising report. So Baldwin's been raising alarm bells about this race being so close. The most recent period is October 1st, the 16th. She outraced Hovde 3-1. Her haul was more than twice what it was the same period 6 years ago when she was cruising re-election. So probably a little boost for financially, but how's that going to play out in the polls? We're a week and a half out. Don't forget, too, 2 years ago, we're talking about a red wave hitting Wisconsin nationally. That didn't materialize. Are we misreading things right now? Is it really nip and tuck? Marquette may probably have some clarity on Wednesday next week.
All right. We'll definitely have reporting on that next week. Now let's get to stock picks this week. And rising is Congressman Brian Stile.
So Peter Barca is getting the Brad Paff treatment. So remember, 2 years ago, Brad Paff, state senator, running against Derek Van Dorn in the 3rd Congressional District, House Majority PAC had 2 weeks of ads reserved. It pulled the first week, let him hang in the wind, then pulled the second week and left him exposed. Now it's Barca's turn. So House Majority PAC this week dropped its first week of its $2 million buy. It still has 1 week left. People I talk to don't expect him to actually spend that money. It's a sign that that challenge of Brian Stiles just didn't really pop. Now, you need the right environment, right message, right candidate in this race. It is not a swing seat like a true 50-50, right, but it can be swingy. Stiles just, he doesn't have any baggage the way Derek Van Orden does in a Republican-leaning seat. It just looks like he's in good shape for re-election right now, especially when the National Group are pulling money back from Democrats. And oh, by the way, Stiles viewed as somebody who can run statewide someday. And part of Democrats' motivation to challenge him was, one, they want to help top the ticket, you know, Baldwin and Harris.
Mm-hmm.
But two, you want to take the machine off of Brian Stiles in case he runs statewide someday. They didn't really do that this campaign. There were some attacks that kind of ran course cycle, but he seems pretty unscathed. Now, miracles do happen. Polls could be wrong, so we'll see on November 5th. But right now, he's in a strong position to win re-election in November.
All right, let's get to Mix this week and Anthony Phillips.
So the committee elect Republican Senate keeps pumping money into Phillips, and people keep asking me, why are they doing that and not helping Dewey Strobel? So the 18th Senate District, where Phillips is running, is open. New seat runs from Oshkosh to Appleton along Lake Winnebago. It's about a 54% Dem seat. Democrats were so confident about this race, like in mid-September, they pulled all their ad buys for Kristen Alfheim, an Appleton council member, and put them elsewhere. Well, Restoration PAC, was linked to Dick Uihlein, came in and dropped $600K on TV. Okay. CSRS gave Phillips $100,000 mid-September. Okay. Well, now CSRS gave him another $225,000 in the most recent reporting period. So reports are due on Monday, but some file them early. I found Phillips. There's the money. Why are you spending that much money in a district that is not great for you? When I go over to the 8th district, where Dewey Strobel is in a neck-and-neck race with Jody Havish-Sinikin, an attorney, he is getting pounded on the air. Jody Havish-Sinikin, as all said and done, will have close to $5 million on TV in a state Senate race.
I was just going to say, okay? state Senate race.
Dewey Strobel is not nearly close to that. Last 2 weeks of the race, it's a 6-1 advantage in her favor. Now, at this point, it's almost too late to buy ads. You can try. Milwaukee, as you know, is saturated for advertising right now from political ads. But why weren't they investing in Dewey earlier? Like, that's a 50-50 seat, actually kind of maybe a little, like a 51% GOP seat. He's not gotten help from CSRS, at least not up to this point. Dewey has about $1 million buy overall. He hasn't raised $1 million so far, so I'm looking at that next report next week to see, like, okay, where'd the money come from? So maybe they gave him some help late. But they weren't investing early. It's kind of raising some eyebrows, but why not? Because you've got an incumbent in a 50-50 seat. And oh, by the way, Dewey Strobel is not getting help from outside groups besides Americans for Prosperity. They're canvassing for him and stuff, but nobody else is really helping him because he doesn't help people inside the building. So if you are a utility, for example, and, you know, these people who push legislation, they give money to campaigns. They're not happy with Dewey because he helped kill this bill the utility bill wanted. Alcohol interests aren't helping Dewey because he was an impediment for a big alcohol bill last
year.
Like, they're not willing to help Dewey because he doesn't help them. So he's kind of on an island. Now, if he loses and the Democrats pick up the 18th, there'll be a lot of questions why CSRS spent money there but not over here.
All right. And following this week is Ryan Hipsch, based on some racial social media posts from his past.
Look, you know, social media is a bugaboo for everybody, it seems like, if you do something stupid in your youth. His youth was almost 10 years ago. It wasn't like ancient history. This guy is a 2014 high school graduate. These posts are from around his high school years. Running against Steve Doyle, a Democrat in a 50-50 seat. Hipsch is getting pounded right now with mail and ads about these comments. He went on social media last weekend, posted a lengthy video to say, like, that's not the person I am right now. Steve Doyle basically is lucky he didn't have the stuff in high school, social media.
Right.
It's like, okay.
A little bit of an age gap.
That's not how I would try to defend myself, but okay, I get that. But looking at that race, this is not helping. If you're explaining politics, you are losing, especially about an issue like this. As a kind of a rematch candidate, it's a special challenge sometimes. Doyle won by 2.5 points in 2022. Democrats invested in him heavily this cycle to help bolster his chances. But this now gets to the bigger assembly map. Now, we've talked before, Robin Voss, the assembly speaker, if he wants to have a manageable caucus in the majority, he's got to get past 50 votes. He can't be at 50. He needs 54, 55. Democrats have a path to win the assembly. They need Harris to win top of the by 2 or 3 points. I'm not seeing that right now from the numbers that I'm looking at, talking to people. I'm sure you're seeing the same thing. Okay, 50-50 ball game, Republicans favored to win the assembly. To get to 54-55, though, Romney is basically playing inside straight in poker. If you know about that, any easy. And this is one race that he liked to have to make it easier for him to get that number.
All right. I'll be fascinated to watch. Just 11 days to go. All right. That will do it for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, Your Week in Review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.